Welcome to the EU Energy Projects podcast, a podcast series from Enlit and Friends, focusing on the clean energy transition for the European Union and the EU Commission-funded energy projects that will help us achieve it. My name is Areti Daradimou. I am the editor of the EU Energy Projects podcast and your host. In this episode of the EU Energy Projects podcast, I am joined by Elena Giannakopoulou, CSO of PPC, and Kilian O'Donoghue, Policy Director of Eurelectric. And together, we explore how electrification and decarbonization can strengthen Europe's energy security amid rising threats, market pressures, and geopolitical tensions, drawing on insights from Eurelectric's latest report on security of supply. Hello, Elena. Hello, Kilian. Thank you very much for being here with me today. Let me start with my first question, which might sound a little bit straightforward, generic, but I think that we would all like to know, what does security of supply mean in today's increasingly electrified and interconnected European energy system? Elena, would you like to start?
Sure. The definition has always been the same, right? So security of supply is about uninterrupted availability of energy at affordable prices. So to have energy when and where we need it. What has changed with the energy transition and the technological development that drove this transition, and also considering the recent geopolitical crisis, is the pathway and the means that we have to achieve it. So for example, today, and in order to define this a bit better, we need to think in two worlds. There is the big picture, the macro world, which has to do with everything that today, because of this technological development, can consist a risk to the security of supply. And this has to do with our partners that provide us different fuels or technologies in order to be able to produce energy and electricity specifically. It has to do with the cyber security. And then you have, and of course, the climate change, so the extremes that we are facing today, which are not anymore really extremes. We are talking about a world that it's business as usual. Climate conditions are very different. And then you have this microsystem for all of us, which has to do with the power system and what it means to rely your power system to the cost competitive solar and wind, and how you are going to complement these resources and in different time horizons, so, you know, during the day or across weeks or then months, in order to make sure that lights stay on.
I couldn't agree more, Elena. And you actually made a mention that is quite important about renewables, and security of supply of renewables is a very important topic for the European Union, for the European Commission, given also the fact that we are lacking a little bit behind from the likes of the US or China, etc. Kilian, do you agree with that? And can you also tell us if the concept of energy resilience per se has changed over the years? I know that you had also a report made recently, right?
Thanks. Yeah, well, I would say at the most basic level, the concept of energy resilience, energy security is the same it always was. It's the uninterrupted access to energy at affordable prices. So if we put it in a historical context, okay, energy resilience before World War II was about diversity of oil supply. So the UK, Churchill decided to switch his navy to oil, and he said that is fine once we diversify our oil suppliers. Then move it forward, it became more about gas, and then Europe not being over-reliant on Russian gas. Today, the concept is still the same, having that reliability, but it's more a question of renewables. So if I dive into renewables, I would say the big picture, we think renewables is a more secure energy system. The reason it's something we control, it's domestic source, and we have very good renewables potential in Europe. Elena's joining us from Greece, lots of wind, lots of solar, an excellent country to benefit from renewables. And a lot of these you can apply at a pan-European level. So we see renewables as being very good for energy security. what we need to do now is to harness fully the potential of renewables. And if we do that, we'll have less import dependency of fossil fuels. So today, we spend over 1 billion euros a day importing fossil fuels. So the import bill was 451 billion last year. So we think we can significantly reduce that bill and instead invest it in the infrastructure and renewables here in Europe.
When you say renewables, do you also include nuclear as per the latest EU Commission taxonomy or not?
So when I say renewables, no, I'm not including nuclear. So when we talk about carbon-free electricity, that includes nuclear. When we speak of renewables, we're referring mostly to wind, solar, and hydropower, mostly. What we have in Europe today is 74%, so almost three quarters of our power is decarbonized. So about 50% renewables, 25% nuclear. So you have a very decarbonized mix in Europe. That's why electricity as a vector is a very good thing to promote action against climate change. If you compare us to other vectors, there's no competition. Gas is inevitably a fossil fuel. So the more things which run off electricity, buildings, transport, industry, the better it is for climate change.
What do you think, Elena, on this topic of nuclear? Are we going to see nuclear in Greece anytime soon?
That's a question for the policymakers, not for us. But we started our discussion talking about security of supply, and we talked about, you know, reliance and uninterrupted access to energy. But we also talked about affordability, and I think it's not just a coincidence that today we have this high penetration of solar and wind. Of course, there has been support during the early years. But talking about security of supply, in addition to what Kilian said, of course, that reduces the electrification, is reducing our reliance on fossil fuels. There is one more element that is important, that solar and wind are today the cheapest ways of producing 1 megawatt hour of electricity. And this is not just in Europe. This is almost in, I think, 70% of the world. Of course, this brings questions about flexibility, but we need, I feel, to remind ourselves that we are, through electrification of other sectors, we can get to a system that is more affordable. And at the end of the day, this is an equally important component in our discussion, because electricity, you know, it's not just another sector. It's the foundation of civilization. There is no other solution to get my electricity, right? So I totally agree with Kilian. When it comes to nuclear, it's a trickier question because it has different requirements and different conditions that you need to satisfy.
Makes total sense, Elena. Let's go back a little bit on the security of supply and discuss the main external pressures currently threatening that security. We recently had the example of Spain totally losing in some areas electricity. A couple of days ago, if I'm not mistaken, in Cannes, in France, we had the same, and it was cyber threat that was confirmed. What are the external pressures, as I asked? Kilian, would you like to start?
Yeah, I can begin. I would say we see kind of four main external pressures. The first I've already covered, and that's just the import of fossil fuel. As I said, we spend over 1 billion a day, and that's just an external pressure that we're inherently facing today. In our report, we dive into detail on three external pressures, okay? It's hybrid threats, it's supply chains, and it's also climate change. So hybrid threats, you have two main forms. The first is basically physical attacks against your generation. As part of the study, we actually went to Ukraine. I was there for a week myself, and we looked at what they're facing on the ground in terms of their systems being hit by missiles. And we do have some takeaways there in terms of how you can make that system more resilient. Hopefully, physical warfare will not come back to Europe. We're really crossing our fingers there. But we need to prepare, and we have signed some takeaways in the study on what we can do there. The second is cyber attacks. And as society relies increasingly on electricity, electricity needs to be increasingly reliable. So we need to ensure we have very good resilience against cyber attacks. Another element we need to prepare for is climate change. We're seeing much more extreme weather, and that applies across Europe. So if I go back to the summer of 2022, with very hot summer. It was very hard to cool some of the nuclear reactors in France. We've seen wildfires in Greece. All this extreme pressure puts a lot of pressure on the system, on the grids, etc. As climate change it gets felt more and more, that's something we're going to have to prepare more for. And the last element is supply chains. We're moving from a fossil fuel intensive economy to a raw material intensive economy. And certain raw materials become very significant and very important. We just need to make sure in Europe we have the access to the necessary raw materials in the transition.
I couldn't agree more with you, but I would like to ask you, what is the title of the report and where can we find it?
Yes, of course. So firstly, the title is called Redefining Energy Security in the Age of Electricity. The background to the study is that in 2022, we'd possibly an unprecedented energy crisis in Europe. We had the cutoff on gas from Russia, and we really felt the impacts of that. What happened then was our board in Eurelectric came to us and they said, okay, we need to be prepared so this doesn't happen again. I want you to look into this. And within Eurelectric, I've led the secretariat work. I work closely with Elena, who was appointed by the board as the representative from the board to look into this issue. So that's the background to the study. We launched it at the Munich Security Conference in February this year, and we'll have our Brussels launch at our Power Summit in June this year. In essence, the study is looking at two key questions. Firstly, what does it mean to have an energy system increasingly reliant on electricity? We're going to greatly increase electrification rates going forward. What does that mean? And the second, which is kind of more about electricity, is we're going to have a power system increasingly dominated by variable renewable electricity. How can we ensure the lights stay on under that system? So we're trying to answer those kind of two core questions in the study. And I would just say, please do read it, and we welcome any feedback.
Elena, Kilian mentioned the war in Ukraine in this report. We both know what Heraclitus, our ancestor, said about war being the father of all and king of all. It is unfortunate, but is it yet again proving right? Are we learning a lot from the Ukraine war?
We did learn a lot. There are so many lessons learned, unfortunately, with the hard way. But we did. First of all, that something that might sound simple, but over-reliance is putting our strategic autonomy into risk. In the past, policymakers, not wrongly, they prioritized cheap energy, access to cheap energy sources, over-reliance. And the challenge that we have after what happened to Ukraine is how we are going to balance these two moving forward. And as we discussed, thanks to the technological development, we have solutions in our hands. We have renewable energy. We operate in Europe, and we have the opportunity of leveraging what 27 different countries can offer, because there is a lot of complementarity in Europe. So we don't have in Europe cheap shale gas, right? We don't have cheap gas in general. But what we do have is we have wind in the north and we have solar in the south. And if you interconnect the markets, you can go really a long way leveraging this, of course, through investments in the grid, both national and cross-border. And then you are left with a smaller, not insignificant, but a smaller issue, which is how I complement these variable technologies and how I provide electricity for the extra, for the last mile. That was one thing. And the other thing is, as we are moving to this world where we rely on, you know, technology, on equipment, we have now this lesson learned on how we diversify our partnerships to make sure that we are not going to face similar issues as we move forward.
I'd like to comment a little bit on Ukraine, because that was quite prominent in our study. We have a few takeaways from that. The first we would say is a decentralized system is a more secure system in times of war. I don't like talking about this or phrasing it the way I'm going to phrase it, but in a war circumstances, it's often about getting bang for your buck when you fire missiles. So an Iskander missile costs $3 million. And you see from the Russian perspective, they want to knock out as many gigawatts as possible with that Iskander missile. if you have a wind farm, you know, like 36 wind turbines, then that's, you know, 3 million a pop. They have to hit 36. It becomes very, very expensive. Whereas centralized generation, particularly gas and nuclear, it's you knock out more generation by hitting those assets. So a decentralized system is more secure in a war. In Europe, we need both centralized and decentralized. We're not saying that, but I'm just saying in a war circumstance, is it more secure. Second thing is interconnection makes a major difference. We had a major success at the beginning of the war in that the Ukrainian electricity system managed to connect with the European electricity system. We did this in record time, and that meant Ukraine was no longer isolated. So interconnection is very good for security supply. And the final thing is you need both the military and the energy system working close together. And we need a lot of missile defense to protect ourselves against attacks on our assets. So that's just a few takeaways we had from the war I wanted to add.
Did you know that Enlit has another podcast? The Energy Transitions podcast is a broad-ranging bi-weekly podcast about the people accelerating the energy transition in Europe and beyond. You can find it on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you enjoy your podcasts. Yes, I think it's safe to say that the rising cybersecurity threats and geopolitical tensions are reshaping the priorities of energy providers, policymakers, etc. But Elena, what is the role of the modern utility in this context?
Very different from what it used to be. I can tell you that. So in the past, we were worried, utilities were worried about, you know, cost competitive energy, market competition. But today we have much more things to think about as we deliver our plans. So we are not longer just energy providers, energy generators and suppliers. In a way, we have transformed ourselves to, you know, multidimensional energy platforms and resilience actors. We operate critical infrastructure, and we need to make sure that we invest in this infrastructure so that it's secure, it's resilient against all these internal and external threats that we discussed. But definitely moving forward, these aspects, the security, the protection of our assets, and how we diversify our portfolios as well, are on the top of our list. And there are new sectors that are now coming at the heart of this, as is the whole cybersecurity issues, which are very new to us, but we need to make sure that all the architectures are in place in order to protect our assets. And of course, you know, geopolitics and supply chains are changing our investment decisions in order to keep delivering. We need to make sure that supply chains, that we have the right plan to keep buying and installing equipment at the right price and at the right pace. Because it's not just the Ukraine war, it's all the issues that we recently also faced in ports, in the Red Sea, in Suez Canal. So we need to look at the geopolitics and all these complexities and make sure that we are distributed enough without, though, compromising the economics of all these technologies, because at the end of the day, they speak to the affordability, which is extremely important in our business.
Not to mention tariffs from our beloved allies also, right? If I'm not mistaken. Yeah. What about autonomy, however? Is there a future in which Europe is autonomous? And I'm not talking fully autonomous, no continent, no country can be fully autonomous. But is there a future in which a united Europe can have a certain autonomy in supply, both of energy and technology?
So what I would say, so what we promote always is Euroelectric, and what we promote in the study is this idea of smart strategic autonomy. Yeah. So obviously we cannot produce everything domestically, but there's a lot we can do, and we just need to be clever and smart in how we do it. A lot of this is less energy policy, it's more industry policy. And we're asking policymakers to come with a clear plan for what Europe leads on. And I think when you break it down, we already know in advance what the key supply chains and the key sources of the future are going to be. Yeah, it's wind, it's solar, it's batteries. And we just need a clear plan for what we want to produce in Europe, to what extent, how we're going to have access to certain raw materials. And there's always a trade-off. Elena touched upon it earlier in the podcast. There's a trade-off between the cheapest source and the security of certain sources. And it's about finding the sweet spot. And as Europe, we just need a very clear plan on that. Yeah. And we need to combine industry policy and energy policy to get it right.
How can, however, energy systems balance the often competing goals of affordability, sustainability, and security?
So there is this misconception, I would say. Kilian spoke about this sweet spot, you know, this fine balance between security of supply and sustainability and affordability. But, and I am afraid that I will repeat myself in the sense that we have something today. We have a kit of technologies that can help us reduce our reliance. So the question is not about being autonomous. We don't need to be completely autonomous. This is going to be extremely expensive to be autonomous on everything. And there are some battles that have already been lost in the sense that there are parts of the world that they can produce certain technologies very, very cheaply. There is no need for that. So we can leverage this. But let's keep in mind that from the moment that you install a PV panel or a battery pack or a wind turbine on the ground, they have a lifetime of 20 years. So as we move, you know, from a system that is based on keep burning molecules to a system that you put there your equipment and this generates electricity over the next 20 years, you are both sustainable and you have reduced your reliance. And at the same time, as I said, because cost curves have come down, you are significantly cheaper. The question is what you are doing with the flexibility that is required in the system in order to make sure that lights stay on when it's not sunny and it's not windy. And there you have, again, a portfolio of options from batteries to pump hydro to cross-border interconnections to pick your gas plants. Of course, nuclear has a certain role to play in certain systems where they already have nuclear in their power mix. And if you design properly and if you leverage what you can find across regions, we don't have a more expensive system. On the contrary, we have a more sustainable and a more secure system that at the same time is less expensive.
So when we speak about energy, we always speak about this famous triangle of balancing affordability, sustainability, and security supply. And in short, we think there's one word, it's the solution, and that's electrification. It's electricity. So let me break down why. So decarbonization. The power sector today is 3/4 decarbonized. Yeah. So we only have 25% to go. Renewables are the cheapest source. So we're very confident we've become climate neutral around 2040. So we're very good in terms of decarbonization. Now let's go to cost. The more you electrify, the cheaper it becomes overall. Simple reasons, using electricity is just more efficient. So let's take vehicles. If you compare internal combustion engine to EV, it's much more efficient using EVs. Yeah, so you use less energy. Same with if you look at buildings, heat pumps are much more efficient than gas boilers. And then the final issue is secure supply. And we do think electrification is much better in terms of secure supply. It's a source you control. It's homegrown rather than being dependent on imported fossil fuel. So when we speak of this famous trilemma, it's about electrifying society is what we think. And I would just say we're not doing great in Europe in terms of electrification. So we're doing very good in terms of decarbonizing power, but we're not doing very good in terms of running more things off power. Electrification rates is 23% in Europe today, but it's stagnating the last 5 years. If I compare it to China, they were 18% 15 years ago, and now they're at 30%. So we need to look at ourselves a bit in the mirror in Europe and say, okay, what can we do to increase electrification, given that it's good for secure supply, it's good for decarbonization, it's good for our own competitiveness.
We should, however, also make sure that this increased demand for electrification does not outpace grid capacity and flexibility, or am I wrong?
Yeah, so we've always said there's two big challenges in the transition. The first is permitting, the second is grids. So in terms of permitting from a legislative perspective, we've passed some key legislation and hopefully that gets implemented now so we're faster permitting processes. The second challenge is grids. And the previous flagship study we did, Your Electric, was called Grids for Speed. And what we said is we need to go from the current 38 billion a year we spend in Europe to 67, possibly 55 billion a year in investments. So we need to invest heavily in the grid, particularly at DSO level, distribution level. And there's certain things we can do which would really help things. I think it's important to promote this concept of anticipatory investments. So we're in a position where we know society is going to electrify, but we can't build the grids in anticipation of that demand now. And that's becoming a bit of a bottleneck. So we need to kind of have better rules in terms of how we plan out the grid and to make the investments today for the demand that we know is coming tomorrow. So grids are a challenge now, but if you get the investment right, it should be okay.
Elena, how do you think EU-level coordination can strengthen national efforts to secure energy supply?
What do you mean when you say energy supply? In general?
In general, yeah. Let's keep it in a general aspect.
There is a lot of power in our unity. As I said, the sum of our efforts is much greater than, you know, the sum of the individual efforts. EU has a big is a big market. The technological improvements and the way that the power systems are evolving is driven, of course, by the characteristics of each system. But at the end of the day, the technologies, the options that we have are the same for everyone. So we can leverage a lot the power that our size gives us when we enter in the different negotiations. And what we saw during the crisis was exactly that. The power that our coordinated response and that our size and how we can benefit this, we can be benefited by this. So if we come up with a common vision, and I think we do have that in Europe, and also we make sure that we all walk the same pathway, not without respecting the different characteristics that its power system has, but at the end of the day, in terms of procurement, for example, or in terms of budget and grid enhancements, the needs are more or less the same across the European countries. So there is a lot that we can get through our partnerships, the old ones and the new ones. And as we are stepping into this new world where security of supply has a different, not meaning as we said, but it requires different technologies.
Killian, do you agree?
I agree 100% with Elena. I think promoting secure supply at a regional and a European level is a no-brainer. Basically, the internal energy market is a great thing and it makes things much cheaper for everybody. What we have, if you look at a macro perspective, pan-European wide, is the following. We have very good renewable sources, very good wind and solar between the north and the south. We have a lot of baseload generation, particularly nuclear. And also we have a lot of firming capacity in the terms of green batteries, both in the Nordics and in the Alps. So what we need to do is integrate Europe more, both at a regional and pan-European level. In terms of security supply, you come with a much more secure system and a much cheaper system. For that, obviously, we need to push things forward. We need to sometimes force member states to do certain things which they're a bit reluctant to do. But if we do that, we'll have a more secure system and a more cheaper system.
As we're approaching the end of our conversation, wish I had more time to pick your brains a bit further. But I will make sure to come and listen to what you have to say during the Keeping the Lights On, Redefining Security of Supply for a Resilient Electric Future plenary session during the Euroelectric Power Summit. I would, however, like to ask you a final question. And my question comes basically from the example of the Greek government and PPC. Because I will say it again, I've said it many times in the past, I was really impressed at how PPC managed to tackle the fires a few years back without cutting our electricity. Honestly, I did not see that coming, and Well, congratulations, Elena, on this one. So, what practical actions should governments and energy providers prioritize today to secure Europe's energy future? What can we learn from the example of PPC?
I mean, there are two pillars in the strategy that at least PPC adopted the last few years. The first had to do with diversification, and this goes across everything. Diversification of technologies, leverage, diversification of geographies, and the second is coordination. So I'm not saying something new to what we have discussed, but how, when you diversify, you really help a lot the technologies, you help a lot with your partnership to make sure that you are secure. And then, of course, as I said, all technologies have a role in this. And not only on the supply side, because we spent already a lot of time talking about the supply and what can generate and what can store and how we can move electrons from one place to the other. But even from the demand side, one of the things that really surprised me, to be honest, during the recent energy crisis we faced in Europe was the flexibility of the demand side. We have been talking, we have spent a lot of time talking about demand and how consumers are inflexible, but that's not true. If you have the right signals in place, there is a lot of flexibility, both in terms of how consumers consume, how and when they consume, but also in terms of, you know, energy intensive players, so the industries. So diversification goes across supply and demand. That's one thing. And the other is coordination. So what Killian said earlier about coordination, not just at the pan-European level, but also at the regional level, we are connected. Countries are not islands. And there are a lot of things that we can achieve if we look at the power system through the lenses of a more regional coordination. One country might have assets that are less utilized than the other one, might be hungry for more capacity. So there is no reason to keep overbuilding the system. We don't need to build something that is expensive. We need to coordinate more what we have on the ground and how we plan our way moving forward. And this is definitely something that, you know, no stakeholder group can do alone. We need the policymakers at the European level, at the national level, to really look at this and see how we can use the regions and eventually the European assets in order to get there. And we can do a lot with everything that we have on the ground and with some investments, of course, on new assets and on the grid.
So I think the EU can play an important role, and EU funding can play an important role, particularly in completing the internal energy market. I think we need a lot of funding for cross-border projects. I think also at the member state level, things like pumped hydro storage has a huge potential to increase security supply. I think money should be given to these kind of things. I also think just more broadly, it's very important for the next MFF, that's the multi-annual financial framework, that we keep up the ambition on climate change and we push towards a greater integration internal market. I think that's the best strategy.
And maybe one more thing from my end. Of course, funding is very important, but and there is, I think, one more actor in this, which is regulation, and dynamic regulation is extremely important. We are facing different challenges, but also different opportunities, and making sure that regulation is not unpredictable, because this endangers investment, but is dynamic and it evolves depending on the needs and also the external factors, is extremely important to make sure that investments will keep flowing and that we will keep delivering both on sustainability, but also affordability and security of supply.
Elena, Killian, thank you very much for this very interesting discussion. I'm looking forward to meeting you both at the Power Summit.
Thank you very much, Arete, for the discussion. Thank you.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
You've been listening to the EU Energy Projects podcast.
a podcast brought to you by Enlit and Friends. You can find us on Spotify, Apple, and the Enlit World website. Just hit subscribe, and you can access our other episodes too. I'm Areti Daradimu. Thank you for joining us.